From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Today I'm announcing a common sense fix to streamline the process for obtaining legal status for immigrants married to American citizens who lived here for a long time.
Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and that was President Joe Biden this afternoon announcing an election year amnesty program that will provide a pathway to citizenship for hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants. South Carolina Congressman Ralph Norman joins me later. And speaking of illegal immigration, the open southern border, combined with the resurgence of terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, have those charged with keeping America safe sounding the alarm.
What's important about these reports and what we're seeing, especially in conjunction with Director Ray's public statements, that we are at the highest level of a possible terrorist threat, that the administration's policies have absolutely, directly related to threats to Americans. These are no longer speculative, no longer hypothetical.
That was Congressman Mike Turner, chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence this past Sunday on Face the Nation. We'll explore that threat with Todd Bensman, senior national security fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies. Yesterday, the U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, called on Congress to require warning labels on social media platforms because of their effect on young people.
My message to Congress is that we have to act with urgency. The most important thing we've got to do is make social media safer with safety standards. But we also have to warn parents and kids about the harms, and that is where a warning label comes in.
That was Surgeon General Murthy on CBS News yesterday. Studies have shown that social media platforms have designed algorithms to trigger addictive behavior. Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors, joins us in just a moment. And did social media contagion play a role in the tragic shooting at a Christian school in Nashville last year, where 28-year-old Audrey Hale killed six people, including three children? Hale was a female identifying as a male. Now, the contributing factors to last year's shooting have remained largely hidden from the public, as officials, including the FBI, have blocked the release of the murderer's diary or manifesto. We're going to talk with John Lott, president of Crime Prevention Research Center, later here on Washington Watch. All of that and a bit more on this edition of Washington Watch. For more than 40 years, the Family Research Council has been defending faith on the front lines of public policy and the culture here in Washington, D.C. and across the nation. And as we reach the end of our fiscal year, we must raise $5 million to ensure that we are well-resourced to defend the faith in 2024 and beyond. And thanks to generous friends of FRC, your gift will be matched dollar for dollar so that you can have twice the impact. But remember, this match is only available until June the 30th. So to partner with the Family Research Council in defending the faith, simply text the word DEFEND to 67742. That's DEFEND to 67742. As I mentioned yesterday in an op-ed for the New York Times, U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy said that social media companies should be required to display mental health warnings about the use of their platforms. Now, such a warning would require congressional action, and it would serve as both a reminder to parents and teenagers that social media use has not been proven safe and can actually have mental health consequences. Now, the warnings would be very similar to those now required on cigarette boxes. Given the growing body of research that has uncovered the intentionally addictive nature of social media platforms, should Congress consider such a move? Joining me now to discuss this, Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. Dr. Clinton, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Tony, thank you for having me. Delight to be with you.
Obviously, parents should monitor what their children consume online and whether or not they should be online. But could some extra help in the form of a warning be warranted?
Tony, we better do something, because at the end of the day, we're losing our kids. I don't know if you saw the report that came out a couple of years ago. The CDC reported that 57% of our daughters, our granddaughters, felt persistently sad during that year. I'm talking about our daughters and our granddaughters. And they also found that 30% of our daughters, our granddaughters, had seriously contemplated suicide in 2021. Now, I know there are a lot of factors related to it, but at the end of the day, we all know that those phones, those devices that we have in our hands, it's insane what's happening. And you're right, the algorithm piece, what they're doing is they're targeting our kids. So if a kid innocently is up there discouraged, depressed, or getting bullied or something like that, they wind up getting targeted with messages and images and more that only drive them further and further in those kind of directions. And so we've got to do something. We've got to get control.
Let's talk a little bit about those techniques that are used in those algorithms, Dr. Clinton. There's such a thing as instant gratification by the likes that someone gets, the response, the immediate response, which actually releases dopamine, which is a feel-good neurotransmitters. I mean, these things are, there's a physiological effect on the users.
Tony, in mental health and addiction research, we understand there are two types of real patterns that stand out. One is substance abuse addiction, where you ingest a chemical to hijack the brain and whatever you're trying to accomplish with that, feel-good sensation or what have you, and it's highly addictive. There's also behavioral addictions where think of gambling, think of viewing pornography. What it does literally is the same process that this behavior, this engagement hijacks the brain, releases the chemicals in the brain, and by the way, it's intoxicating. It becomes highly addictive. We're finding that is happening with this whole online world that, hey, look, everybody, everywhere you go, you can't help but see people on their phone from church to restaurants, Tony, to school, at the water cooler. It's just unbelievable what's happening. And when you're targeted, it's consuming.
Well, as you mentioned, when you combine that with the algorithms that track what you look at, and so it feeds on you, so it becomes like this, I mean, it has this vortex. I mean, it just sucks you in.
It does, Tony. And then add on top of that, I'll give you a couple more P's to go with this, the pressures that kids are experiencing, not only academically in sports, but think about cyberbullying, what's going on. Think about the comparison stuff that starts happening when you're up online, you're alone in your own bedroom, and you're thinking about how everybody else is out having fun and you're locked up or what have you, and the hate that then begins to get spewed all over. People have that they call it digital courage, if you will, and it's just so destructive. Add pornography to the list, Tony. 50% of online sites are porn in nature. We know that kids as early as age are getting first-time exposure to pornography. And then those patterns then continue to, quote, develop rutting in the brain where, again, it's consuming. And then throw in one more P, Tony, predators up online. You know, moms and dads, we've got to get to a whole new place here. We've got to have new levels of conversation and say, listen, we've got to do something because, again, we're losing our kids.
So why do you think that parents, some parents, not all, some parents are maybe timid about engaging their children when it comes to their social media consumption?
You know, Tony, two things come to my mind. One is it's pretty easy just to let the kids have the phone or to let the kids go do their own thing. You're tired, you're exhausted, the pace, the pressure, the pain of modern day life, it's chewing everybody up, and everybody's out of control. And so you kind of let people drift away. Throw on top of it then also just the preoccupation piece with the Internet. When people get consumed in it, they get defensive, they get grouchy. You try to get them off the phone or what have you, and the next thing you know, you're in a fight. So, hey, let sleeping dogs lie. So I see a lot of parents turn away, and so they just don't want to go there. And the tragedy, again, is our kids are getting lost in this cyber world.
Oftentimes, parents look at what their children are being exposed to or what they have access to and engage it the same way that they do. But young people, I mean, up until the mid-20s, your brain is still developing. So you really can't, It's not apples to apples when you consider adult using social media as opposed to a child. So with that in mind, and you can speak to that, but would it be helpful to have Congress approve of warning labels going on social media?
We've got to do something, Tony, and we've got to help parents get control here. Again, the pattern piece here, what it does is it just, again, hijacks the brain and consumes people to a place where that release to let go, you just have to keep doing the same behavior over and over again to create the same desired effect. So, hey, let's be honest. There's a lot of stuff online that's fun. You get up on there, you're gaming, having fun, you're scrolling through videos, et cetera. They bring some joy, especially if you're bored or if you're really bummed out about life. And so these kids just live in this thing is what they're doing. And again, go back to the algorithm pattern stuff that keeps coming and flooding in their direction, especially if it gets into a negative, vicious cycle. That's the stuff we've got to get concerned about. Warning labels, we better do more than that. We better figure out how to tell parents how to manage this well so that we can see the benefit side and make sure we protect ourselves on the downside.
All right, Dr. Clinton, we just have a couple minutes left. Let's do that. Let's first talk about very quickly, what should parents be looking for as warning signs that their children have a problem with social media?
You know, there are a few of them. One, being preoccupied with the internet, just consumed with it all the time. Again, I see a lot of parents just letting their kids live on digital devices because it's easier that way. And they found some things that the kids like, and the kids get consumed by it. And then we lose that time factor. Two, when they're defensive, they can't get off. They're grouchy. I mean, they lose their mind. How many parents out there would raise their hand and say, I understand what you're talking about? They lose track of time. They're spending hours and hours of time. I saw some of the stats, Tony. 5 hours a day teens are spending up on social media. That's conservative. Some are saying 8 to 18-year-olds are about 10 hours a day. Heavy users, catch this, 16-plus hours a day up online.
Well, how do you spend 16 hours a day online? You couldn't be
crazy.
Doing anything else.
Yeah, you're just living in, you're living with a device in front of you. And you know what, Tony? A lot of kids are locking themselves up in their room. They're giving up their sleep time, certainly all their family time. These kids aren't outside playing soccer, softball,
right,
baseball, fishing or what have you. They're just locked down in their rooms.
All right, Dr. Clinton, very quickly, 30 seconds. What are some practical steps parents can take to begin to rein in that runaway time with social media?
Tony, I'm big on relationship connection. Get connected with your kids. There's a beautiful word out there called attunement. Can you see your kids where they're at, what they're going through? The busy, preoccupied parent misses all those cues or those opportunities to be in those special moments. Kids want a relationship with mom and or dad. So we start there. Let's build that bridge back. And then, hey, make sure that they're seen, that you know what you love about them. Make sure your kids know that, Tony, and figure out how to help them soothe that emotion regulation stuff, that chaos that's going on in their life. If moms and dads would just step in, the number one thing that still makes kids happy is a good relationship with mom,
yeah,
and or dad.
Absolutely. Dr. Tim Clinton, great advice, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
Folks, I'd also recommend reading the Bible together as a family. Go through our Stand on the Word Bible reading plan. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. And by the way, didn't get to put it out there before the break, but if you would like to look into our Bible reading plan, families are doing it. It's a great, it's just great to bring the family together. You can find out more. Text the word Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. Well, ever since the tragic murders of both children and staff at Nashville Covenant School last year by Audrey Hale, a 28-year-old woman who was identifying as a man, many have called for the release of Hale's diary or manifesto, which has been withheld by both Nashville police and the FBI. Now, this week, a Nashville judge said that she would soon rule whether these writings can be released. Notably, the judge also ruled that not to jail Michael Lethe, the publisher of the Tennessee Star, which reported on leaked pages from Hale's diary. Now, is the government withholding these documents for fear of what they might reveal? And do they have the right to do that? Joining me now to discuss this, Dr. John Lott, president of Crime Prevention Research Center. John, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Now, you've been tracking this. You've written about it. What do we know thus far about the writings behind what has been leaked?
Right. Well, I mean, we've had a couple leaks that have occurred. We had some months ago, we had three pages that were leaked. And now, in the last week or so, we've had almost four dozen other pages that were obtained by the Tennessee Star. And it tells us a range of things. It tells us the mental troubles that this individual has. It tells us stuff about the planning that went into the attack, why they picked the target that they did. But, you know, to me, the most interesting things are the FBI's letter to the Nashville Police Department about why they demanded that this diary remain a secret and not be released to the public, that they were worried that if it was released, it would cause a backlash against transgender individuals. And, you know, there are other things that they put in there about people not properly understanding the information that was there. The problem is, obviously, we've had a number of mass public shootings. And this is the first time that I know of that I've been able to find where the FBI has stepped in and demanded that a diary or a manifesto from these mass murderers wasn't released to the public.
So given your history of tracking these, why would this one be different?
I mean, one can guess, but I assume it's because it was a transgender individual that was there, that they want to protect it. That they, my guess is if it was a white supremacist or something, then not only would the FBI be making a big deal about it, but the president would be out there talking about it. Unfortunately, transgender individuals are actually quite disproportionately overrepresented in terms of these mass public shootings. Since 2018, they're more than seven times their share of the U.S. population and engaging in these attacks. But it's speculation on exactly why they're doing it. I can just infer that it's because of the transgender nature of this individual.
Now, Dr. Lott, also in the letter they talk about, they don't want people to connect these mass murders with mental illness.
Right.
But that also is in the record where a majority of those individuals that have been involved in these mass attacks have been treated for mental illness. And that's something we hear every time there's a shooting. We need more funding for mental illness treatment.
Right. Well, I mean, this person was seeing mental health care professionals. We know that. About 51% of the mass public shooters over the last 25 years were seeing mental health care professionals fairly close to the time where the attack was occurring. You know, one thing you'll see, though, since you mentioned the increased funding, I have no problem with more funding. But people have to understand you can't really expect much from it, because not in one single case, not one of these mass public shooters, even though the ones that were seeing these mental health care professionals were identified prior to their attack as a danger to themselves or others. There's a whole psychological academic literature on why they're unable to go and identify these individuals prior to their attacks.
Well, my point in bringing that out is that's something that the left is repeatedly stating anytime there's one of these mass shootings. They don't point to lawlessness or anything. We need more mental health funding. But in this case, they don't want that information coming out if that's a part of the FBI's rationale for not releasing this manifesto.
I mean, look, obviously this person's disturbed. Obviously she was having severe mental health problems. She was clearly suicidal. As you're indicating before, this could be applied to lots of manifestos or
right.
diaries that these killers have. They haven't made the same type of demands
right.
from local police departments.
There's clearly more here. Just got about a minute and a half left, Dr. Lott. From what we've seen about the 80 pages, which apparently is just a portion of the manifesto, the diary, what can we detect about this troubled young woman?
I think to me, one of the most important things is just the planning that went involved. Apparently, she looked at three other targets that were there. A local mall was her first target. And then there were a couple other schools that she had looked at, but had decided not to go after any of those because of armed security that was available at those. The Green Hills Mall in Nashville area allowed people to carry concealed handguns. And so she picked this school because she had checked it out and didn't believe that there was any security there to go and stop her doing the attack. Look, anybody who reads the diaries and manifestos for these mass murderers know that there's a huge amount of similarity across. You have individuals
right.
who are suicidal, but they want to commit suicide in a way that's going to get the media attention. And they know the more people they kill, the more media attention they're going to get.
So they go after
soft targets.
So
they may be crazy in some sense. Exactly.
Dr. Lott, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. Very insightful, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for being there. Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this break.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and it's always great to have you. Be sure and check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. And also, if you have not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, you can do so at the App Store, Stand Firm. And you get Washington Watch there. You get the Washington Stand. You can get the Stand on the Word all in one place. Again, download the app, Stand Firm, or text APP to 67742, and I'll send you a link. As I previewed yesterday on Washington Watch, the Biden administration announced today an amnesty program for illegal immigrants who are married to U.S. citizens who have been here in the country illegally, for 10 years or more. Now, this amnesty comes just 2 weeks after President Biden attempted to address the border crisis created by his own policies with an executive order changing asylum rules. With the November elections approaching and a majority of voters calling for increased border security, what motive does the Biden administration have for this amnesty announcement? Joining me now to discuss this by phone, Congressman Ralph Norman. He serves on the House Rules Committee, the Budget Committee, and the Committee on Financial Services. He represents the 5th Congressional District of South Carolina. Congressman Norman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, great to be with you.
So what do you make of the president's announcement today?
A travesty. It's you know, you keep thinking that it couldn't get worse. Well, it is. A couple of things. One, it comes on the eve of the killer of a mother with 5 children who made the mistake of going on a mountain trail. And then there was a 13-year-old girl, and all of these were the mother of 5, 38 years old, was killed by an illegal. The 13-year-old little girl was raped by an illegal. All that to say is the Biden administration is trying to save face try to explain to the American people that he's trying to do something. But, well, he's not. The fallacy in the 500,000 that, you know, he's letting in on top of the 9.4 million that he already has is the fact that who's keeping count? This administration is lawless. And the 50,000 children that are under 21, who's going to verify that? Who's going to verify where they've lived and if they've lived in America? So it's a travesty. You would think that, you know, with the deaths and with the with the crime that we're experiencing now, that he would change course, but he's not. And the ones that rule him are pretty well set to control this country through illegals with voting, and he's going to continue it.
Now, even though they put forth requirements on this, you have to be married. Of course, there's no married to a U.S. citizen. There's no time limit, whether that's a week or 2 weeks. It has to have been before yesterday. You have to have been here 10 years. But does this not, regardless of those requirements, does this not incentivize more people to come to this country illegally, hopefully hoping that another program like this will be put forth?
Oh, absolutely. And what he's trying to do, Tony, is put up barriers so that hopefully President Trump will win this election. It'll just make it harder for deportation. But that's got to happen. And President Trump has already said he's going to have a massive deportation effort going on in this country, which is going to take, 15 million to 20 million by the time this man gets through with this invasion, letting it come through. I don't know how. It's going to be a tough sale, but I know South Carolina has already been affected, and every state in the country is.
Congressman Norman, is there anything Congress can do? The president is just unilaterally doing this. What can Congress do?
Well, he's done it through executive order. And, you know, every president has got the ability to do that. The only thing good about executive order is not permanent. It can be changed by the next administration, which it will be. But the damage that he's doing now, with the day he took office 3.5 years ago, he opened the gates up. He's bypassing Congress. And, you know, the House of Representatives has the power of the purse strings. He's bypassing us on that. Because look at the cost that Americans are going to assume when this is said and done.
Well, is there anything to do on that front when it comes to the funding? I know the House just have one chamber. The Senate, obviously not going to go along with it, but is this something that the House might be able to fight over?
Well, we could call for a vote. We could call for a, but see, he's doing it. The problem with Joe Biden is he just does these things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like Merrick Garland holding him accountable. He doesn't listen to the Supreme Court with the free grant of college forgiveness, loan forgiveness. He violates the Supreme Court. So is anything we can do? Practically nothing other than try to stop the money that comes through. And I'm on Rules Committee. We'll try to stop anything that legislatively that comes through that aids and abets this.
But bottom line, it comes down to elections. This fall's election.
Oh, yes, it's elections. It's if we lose this election, then our freedom, our sovereignty, our democracy will go down. We'll go down the tubes. I'm convinced of that. And the sad part about it, you've got a lot of people, if that happens, a lot of good representatives that are trying to do our best, we're going to say, well, the country's lost.
Yeah.
We've got a shot at it now, and I hope and pray we come through with it. But it's another 4 years of this administration, we will have lost every freedom we've had, and the Supreme Court will be decimated, and we'll be bankrupt on top of that.
All right, Congressman Ralph Norman, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tony. Bye.
All right, folks, a reminder to pray, to vote, and to stand. It's essential. We got to be praying, and you got to be registered, and you got to be voting. And we need to stand for these truths. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch on the other side of the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Become a Stand member today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Be sure and check it out. Our word for today comes from 1 Chronicles chapter 7. The sons of Tola were mighty men of valor in their generations. Their number in the days of David was 22,600. Now notice how these men are described. The sons of Tola were sophisticated, cosmopolitan men. No, not hardly. They were mighty men of valor in their generations, men of strength and ability. Now look at the description of their brethren from the families of Issachar. Now, their brethren, among all the families of Issachar, were mighty men of valor, listed by their genealogies, 87,000 in all. See a pattern? Nations are built and sustained by men of valor, not by people who are afraid to confront the lunacy like we see in our culture today, of schools and the entertainment industry, and even corporate America peddles a woke ideology that is indoctrinating our children with a self-absorbed godlessness that will wreck their lives and destroy the nation. We need mighty men of valor in our generation. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. According to national security experts, the alarm bells currently ringing over the threat of a terrorist attack on U.S. soil echoes what many FBI and CIA agents noted in the lead up to 9/11. Now, recent warnings of terror threats from both FBI Director Christopher Wray and Army General Eric Cruillilla have heightened the terror threat, even as national security has faded as a top concern for many voters. Now, how has the Biden administration's foreign policy combined with the border crisis created by their domestic policy, when you consider all of the millions of unaccounted gotaways, increased this terror threat that we're presently facing? Joining me now to talk about this, former terrorism intelligence manager Todd Bensman. He is a senior national security fellow for the Center for Immigration Studies and the author of The Overrun, How Joe Biden's Unleashed the Greatest Border Crisis in U.S. History. Todd, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So the president announcing a new amnesty program, is that pouring fuel on the fire?
Well, I'm not sure that that has a nexus to the national security threat. But what it is it's a a program that I think is geared to thwart the victory of Donald Trump in November. Because remember, Trump has promised actually that he's going to create the greatest deportation program in U.S. history. And I think that what the administration, the current administration plans to do is make that harder for a whole lot of people. They're going to start to put in place, you know, temporary protection status for this group and that group and the other group. And I think it's also not bad for making sure that the spouses of those who are going to get amnesty in this one are going to vote Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we think of national security, terrorist strike here on U.S. soil, obviously the first focus is on the southern border, which is open. A lot of these folks coming across the border, but it's much broader than that. I want to play a clip of FBI Director Christopher Wray and his testimony before a Senate committee on June the 4th, speaking about the threat of terrorism here in the United States. Play clip three, please.
There was already a heightened risk of violence in the United States before October 7th. And since then, we've seen a rogues gallery of foreign terrorist organizations call for attacks against Americans and our allies. And given those calls for action, our most immediate concern has been that individuals or small groups will draw twisted inspiration from the events in the Middle East to carry out attacks here at home.
So, Todd, let's talk about this mix of policy, both foreign and domestic, that is leading to this heightened threat that we've not seen since before 9/11.
Well, I think the director is referring somewhat to the retaliatory war by Israel against Hamas, which is obviously inflamed pro-terrorist you know, voices and people here in the United States, Arabs who live here, are not just illegal immigrants, but people who are here legally, students and whatnot. And I think he's referring to the fact that, you know, the Biden administration has been fairly supportive of Israel, this war, kind of off again, off on again, but nevertheless viewed as too supportive, you know, sending weapons and that sort of thing, that, you know, of course, we should expect to have some strikes here on the homeland from that. I think he's referring to that. But Wray also has spoken quite frequently about the southern border and the increasing and elevated threat of terror infiltration from there. And he's quite right about that.
But when we look at who's coming across that southern border, some of these terrorist organizations that were, if you will, on the ropes, Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, I mean, they've made a comeback under the policies of the Biden administration. And some of those are of concern in terms of those coming across the border, are they not?
It's true. Absolutely. There are foreign terrorist organizations like ISIS-K in Afghanistan and Pakistan that have been able to take advantage of ungoverned territories in that area, and the fact that the U.S. is not striking them as much, and that they've been able to grow. And also, you know, Chechens and Tajikistanis, people that are in Muslim-majority regions of Russia, are free to attack. We've been seeing the Russian people, you know, victimized by some of these groups. They're on the rise. Their ideology is certainly not diminishing at all. You can kill as many as you can, and that's very helpful. But the ideology of global jihad and Islamist supremacy under Sharia law isn't going anywhere. That's still quite an issue. And we've had, you know, tens of thousands of people from those regions crossing our southern border with very minimal vetting. And that is a significant issue to the homeland because, you know, we did kind of crack down on airport traffic and people coming in on legal visas after 9/11 quite a bit, but we haven't done that much on the southern border for the last 3 years. And these Tajikistanis, the FBI rolled up eight of them in early June, who crossed the southern border, and they were planning some sort of a bombing attack. That would be the very first time that a group of terrorists, they caught them in three different cities, that a group of terrorists crossed the southern border to access their American targets on U.S. soil.
So, Dad, when you look, you mentioned Russia. Russia has been the site of a terrorist attack. We look at Iran, actually ISIS hitting Iran. What's kept America safe? What has kept us from seeing another 9/11 type of strike here at home?
Well, for one thing, we haven't been immune from terror attacks. We've had plenty of terror attacks since 9/11. We have them every few years, every couple of years. San Bernardino, Boston, New York. There was a vehicle attack on a bike path there. We have our share of one-offs as well. You know, one guy gets stabbed. Another guy gets run over. We have them here. They're not on the scale of 9/11. But the reason that we haven't had them on the scale of 9/11 is because over 20 years, we got pretty good at counterterrorism. We built up our FBI. We built up all of our federal law enforcement agencies. We started sharing intelligence between agencies, and we got fairly good. The number of terror plots that we've thwarted, like this one involving the Tajikistanis, the eight, are far greater than the successful ones, the few successful ones. The threat is not diminished. It's just that we have stopped an awful lot of them over the last 20 years, and we will probably continue to do that, but they're still going to get through every now and again.
My concern on that front, Todd, is I agree, we have gotten a lot better since 9/11. However, we've moved into this age where people do not trust government, and rightfully so in many cases, where we see the weaponization of government here at home. You know, we talk about this two-tiered system of justice, lack of trust for the intel community. I mean, we just saw a major debate in Congress over one of the primary tools of exposing some of these terror plots, FISA reauthorization, the Section 702. Are you concerned that this lack of confidence that the American people have in giving certain tools to the intel community, to law enforcement, could in the end make us much more vulnerable?
I think that's something that we always should be concerned about. When I was in the intelligence business, you know, we underwent a lot of training about, you know, what you can and can't do to, you know, make sure that we can maintain the trust of the people we served. And I think that there's still a lot of that going on, but you always have had a mistrust of government power, especially law enforcement power, to especially surveillance authorities. I think that's a healthy thing, that a way to kind of keep law enforcement and intelligence services in check so that what you're talking about doesn't happen. I personally don't see that happening yet. I'm sure it happens occasionally where somebody kind of gets out of line. I was in the business for almost 10 years, and I worked closely with FBI line agents and intelligence people. And I mean, at least at the front line, you know, those guys are, you know, they're still protecting America against Islamic terrorism, I think. And I hope that they just don't get sidetracked by political whims, such as, you know, hey, we need to back off of Islamic terror threats and move it over to all of it, over to white supremacy and that sort of thing. We can do two things at once. The country's perfectly capable of juggling several balls at the same time like that.
I think it's, as you point out, I think it's important that there is a healthy tension because we need the checks and balances. But if we become overly politicized in our security and intelligence community, I think there'll be Americans will pull back. And I actually see that tension right now. I think leaning more toward the distrust of law enforcement, the intelligence community. I'm talking about federal, not necessarily state and local. And I'm concerned about that. I think we need to give we need to be able to trust our government to do what it's supposed to do, and that is protect us. And that leads me to my next question, Todd. When you look at what's out there right now, the threats that exist, where would you put us on that scale of, say, 1 to 10? Where are we in terms of threats to the homeland here in the United States?
There's a variety of threats. We've got non-state actors like terrorist groups, foreign and domestic. For example, the groups like they're not really groups, but movements like Antifa, which, you know, we saw rampage through America for 8 months straight in 2020, burning and looting. You have groups on the left, and you also have groups on the right that are domestic. I'm greatly concerned that after the American election in November, that the people who are on the losing side are going to commit violence, and that it's not going to be isolated incidents here and there. And that could be on either side. We also have China pushing to create divisions and exacerbate divisions inside our country and conduct espionage operations, aggressive espionage operations. We've had 50, 60,000 come over the border in the last 36 months. We have the Iranians who are actively conducting cyber warfare against our country. We have the Russians, who are certainly no friends. They're working on disinformation campaigns. We have a lot of state actors, a lot of non-state actors. We have domestic terrorist groups. I'm really worried about what's going to happen in the months, in the days, weeks, and months after November.
Leading up to it, we need to be vigilant. I think there'll be to distract us and turn our attention elsewhere. Todd Binsman, I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, folks. These challenges are there. And I believe this is a very volatile and dangerous time. But we need to pray. We need to vote. We need to stand for truth, and, you know, we need God's protection. I think that is what has kept America safe, and we need to continue to pray for that, and we need to work, and this means vote, engage, to bring America in alignment with God's truth, His way, His words, so that we might have that hand of protection resting upon this nation. It's absolutely critical. Pray, vote, stand. All right, folks. Out of time for today. Until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.